Welcome to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. The Legacy and Faith Show is about the journey of discovering how to create plans that protect wealth and family values for generations. And now the host of the Legacy and Faith Show, Paul Grant.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, another edition of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant. Hi there, Paul.
Hi, Mark. It's good to be with you.
Good to be with you. And continuing an interesting discussion on estate taxes and how to avoid them. They're optional,
right? Right.
You made that interesting proclamation last time, and you're going to expand on that again this time.
Yeah, I'm glad you think that estate taxes and taxes in general is interesting. I hope that the listeners think it's interesting as well, but it's very critical.
It's interesting. I think a lot of people in Washington, there are a lot of people who are making larger amounts of money, and we always hear about like the Jeff Bezos and people like that
who
don't pay any taxes, but
that's
because they have really good estate.
Yeah. Well, and also because they've been very generous or that is one way to then start mitigating taxes is by being radically generous. And of course, they're in a different stratosphere.
That's a whole different one. But there are a lot of people who have a wealthy estate.
Yeah, for sure. And it's rising more and more. It's becoming easier to get $2 million. I remember growing up as a kid that man, if somebody had $1 million, that was like, you got to be kidding me. Mm. And it's like, well, our real estate is worth $1 million now. It's almost hard to find something that is less than 800 in the Pacific Northwest. So what's happened is that it's turned almost a majority of homeowners into millionaires. And all of a sudden, $1 million is certainly not what it used to be. In Washington, we discussed last week, you can find that at legacyandfaith.com, the kind of the foundational approach of that estate taxes are optional. And we have two different estate taxes that we're going to be talking about, which is Washington State has an estate tax, and there's a thing called an exemption. How much is exempt from taxes? So in Washington, the first $2,193,000 is exempt from tax. So that means if you have over that amount of money in your estate, it's going to be taxed at 15%. Per individual. Mm-hmm. That's right. Mm-hmm. So marrieds, you get to add that twice if you do good planning. Mm-hmm. You only get to use it once if you do bad planning or no planning.
Right.
So, and then in the federal scheme, that's really, really high. That's almost $14 million, again, per person. But that tax, 40% if you have over that amount of wealth. So some people have been extremely blessed. They've worked their fannies off and have built great businesses, or they've had multiple real estates and they've and so now all of a sudden all that real estate like we talked about has exploded in value. So nowadays it's much easier to get into the estate tax realm where that really was not quite the same way in the past. So we got to talk about this topic of estate taxes. How do we potentially mitigate those taxes, or even is there a way to fully eliminate them? And the answer is absolutely, because estate taxes are the one tax that are optional. Income tax, you got to pay them. If you sell something, capital gains, you got to pay it. But estate taxes, well, there are ways to go ahead and mitigate or eliminate those, but it starts with good planning. And I ended the show last week with talking about a revocable living trust. The very foundational premise of a revocable living trust, specifically for an individual, for individuals who are married, is that you're able to take advantage of each spouse's exemption. So that means as a married couple, you can have a little under $4.4 million before your estate is exposed to a Washington State estate tax. Mm. If you don't use a revocable living trust,
what other kinds are there?
Well,
what's a testamentary trust?
So I'll get there in just a second.
Okay.
So if you don't use a revocable living trust, let's say you use a will, use beneficiary designations, or unfortunately, in most cases, if you use a testamentary trust, then you're you're not going to use both exemption powers and you're only going to be able to protect 2.2.
Okay.
So testamentary trust. So let's get into it. I am a proponent of revocable living trusts. I think they're a far superior tool to use in your estate plan. But there is an antiquated tool and it's called a testamentary trust. So what does that mean? You may have a will. And in it, if you looked, if you pulled out your will, which you probably haven't looked at in years, number one, we got to get you updated. So specifically, if you have a tax issue, and there might be in that will language that says, if I die and my spouse is alive, then start a trust. Okay. So that's a testamentary trust. The testamentary object, a will, starts a trust. So the trust comes out of the will. Now, why do I say this is antiquated planning? Because, first of all, revocable living trusts are simply superior in what we can do for long-term tax planning. All the testamentary trust is doing is trying to protect against an estate tax. It doesn't consider generational taxes. It doesn't consider that your children will be later exposed to taxes. And here's another problem is that if you are going to use the trust within a will or a testamentary trust, then the surviving spouse, after losing a husband or a wife, at the time of death, which is no fun for any spouse to go through. So they are in the grieving process and they have to do what you call a disclaimer. So if we use a will, that means my bank accounts remain jointly titled with my spouse. So here's a very easy basic premise that most people understand, which is joint checking account. If I die and my wife is a joint owner, specifically when we title things jointly owned with right of survivorship, then who gets that bank account if I die? Well, my wife does because she's a joint owner. So in other words, the last person standing wins, right? My spouse automatically, by law, takes over the checking account. Okay, so has anything gone to my will? So if I have a joint account and my wife automatically takes it over by law, then that checking account doesn't go under the instructions of my will. That's where the trust is. So therefore, now the checking account has missed going to the will. How about if I have an IRA and I leave my wife as the beneficiary? Again, if we have a beneficiary, that is a probate runaround, and it never goes to the instructions of the will. Why? Because my wife, by contract law with the institution that I have my IRA with, automatically receives my IRA. So it never goes to the will. So how, in those examples, the house jointly titled, so in other words, almost everything in my estate, not one of my assets ever gets to the will where the tax language is. So how does anything ever get to the will, and how do we ever implement the instructions that are hidden in a testamentary trust? The answer is we don't. The only way that you do it is you have to have the spouse during the grieving process remember that they contacted an attorney 15, 20 years ago and should probably do something about that. But he or she already has all the assets. So they're thinking to themselves, why do I need an attorney? I already have control of everything. There's nothing I need from an attorney. So what they've done is they've forfeited all the tax planning, which is hidden in the will because no asset ever gets to the will. And so therefore, that's why I call a testamentary trust an antiquated way of doing estate planning. So will the tax language work? So I've looked at many testamentary trusts and I've reviewed them. And for the most part, not always, but for the most part, the tax language is actually correct. But it's irrelevant if no asset ever gets to the tax language. So therefore, a testamentary trust is an antiquated way of doing estate planning where we put trust language in a will instrument, the testamentary instrument. And by my standards, even if the legal language is correct, it practically does not work because the spouse has everything. They don't need to open up probate, and so therefore they've forfeited any of the tax language. There's many other legal reasons, which I won't get into, but there are other reasons why a testamentary trust is just simply not an appropriate tool anymore. We have a much, much better tool. It's called a revocable living trust, and it is the best way to do estate planning nowadays.
Okay, we've got that one down. Get the revocable living trust. What about if you're not married? Is there a need for a trust versus a will when talking about taxes in that situation?
Yeah, good. And so because I told you that a revocable living trust, the premise of a revocable living trust is that it, for married couples, it ensures that the exemption amount, in other words, the money that's not exposed to estate taxes, is properly dealt with. And so what if you're single and you only have one exemption? So if you die, whether you use a will or whether you use a trust, am I still not exposed? I have the same limitations without additional planning. So the base planning, why would I use a trust? Well, number one, a trust, when properly designed and when it's properly funded, meaning the assets properly are in the name of the trust or pointed to the trust, first of all, a trust will avoid the probate process. Now, I know that there's many estate planners out there who would say, well, Washington State is not a, you know, the probate's not a big deal. We don't pay an inventory fee or an asset fee like some other states do. There's not a law that says that the attorney gets so much money like in Florida or New York or California. They actually penalize you for using a will and going through the probate system.
Really?
Oh, yeah. There's quite good fees attached in those probate systems. So therefore –
which states were those again?
Yeah. Places that – well, maybe Florida some people want to move to, but the other two you don't want to move to. So the theory or what I've heard other people say is that, well, because it's not as expensive, it's not a big deal to go through probate. But here's my response to that is prove it. Tell me – for sure that my family's experience going through a probate or going through the court system is not going to be a big deal when I die. Mm. And of course, no attorney, absolutely no attorney would ever put their name and reputation on the line to say, well, of course, I guarantee it. They won't do it. Mm. And so but when a revocable living trust is properly done and properly funded and all the assets are in it and there is updated proper language, I actually will put my reputation on the line and say, I know that we will not go to a probate. And so, as a matter of fact, with my clients, I actually do guarantee it to the extent to say, if it lands into a probate and it was my fault, I guarantee you I will not charge your family any of my expenses or fees to actually take your family through that probate. So I actually do guarantee it. Mm. So that's a power of a revocable living trust. And so a single individual, not only that, but we have to look at generational money and how money passes person to person and the different taxes it would be exposed to. But I think we're going to have to start taking that up next week, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay, estate and tax planning attorney Paul Grant, you like the way he thinks, you like his statement that estate taxes are optional, and you want to find out more, how do people get in touch with you, Paul?
Well, head over to our website, legacyandfaith.com. There's past podcasts, upcoming educational opportunities, ways to communicate to us that we'd love to hear from you, all found at legacyandfaith.com.
Okay, back with more of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant in just a moment.
Can I avoid probate? Will I lose everything if my health becomes compromised? How do I preserve what I have for me and my family? Will the government take it all? This is Paul Grant with the Legacy and Faith Show. These are some of the most common questions we get on a daily basis, and there are solutions for all of these issues. It is time for you to protect your family and what God has placed under your stewardship, and we can help. Go to legacyandfaith.com to find out more about our services and upcoming educational opportunities. That's Legacy and Faith.
Your photos, slides, scrapbooks, and home movies are invaluable and irreplaceable. Barry Kenny here with the Bear Services. Call us to save them as digital files to be stored electronically and shared liberally. We will even come to you so they stay in your possession. Go to thebearservices.com for more information. That's thebearservices.com.
We now return to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant, and continue today's practical discussion to apply biblical principles for kingdom purposes.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, and Paul is bringing us through the idea that estate taxes are indeed optional with proper estate planning. Your company called Planning with Purpose.
Yeah.
And you're really talking about why that is this week with this interesting discussion. And I think it's interesting discussion on how to save taxes, not pay any taxes.
Yeah.
Or pay as little as possible.
Right.
You want to bring up the idea that, too, that estate taxes need to be looked at from a family perspective and not just a client perspective.
Yeah, because as we headed into break, you asked the question, but what advantage would there be to a single individual? Because if the primary premise of using a revocable living trust is that we get to utilize a married couple's exemption power, make sure that they're both utilized, then what advantage is there to a single individual? Well, we talked about the potential of avoiding probate, but at the very end there I said, but there's other advantages. We have to look at how taxes and how money moves. So if I'm single and I have a reasonable, healthy estate and I pass away and I leave it to my kids, well, if my kids are doing well and they're not going to be rugrats and spend it all, right, because I preserved it, but now it gets into their hands. But so let's say that I think last week I used the number $3 million, so I'll just stay there. So if I had $3 million as an example, I'm in the storyline, I'm single, and I die. That means each of my girls is getting $1.5 million. Now, that's not perfect because there's an estate tax. I would have been exposed to an estate tax at that point. Regardless, let's just use simple math. They are already, just with the inheritance, a smidgen away from having their own estate tax. So why would we use a revocable living trust for singles as well as marrieds? Because it's about not just your tax exposure, but when you have something, how is that going to be utilized by the next generation? And I can only make assumptions of the future based upon what we currently have. Here's the unfortunate part is that estate taxes will not be exactly the same to the next generation. I don't know what that means. I don't know what that looks like. I don't know what it looks like on a federal level. I don't know what it means on a state level. But all I know is that right now we've got a little over $2 million. So if I leave my girls a reasonable inheritance, then their risk or their tax exposure is almost immediate. So now I've paid a tax just to hand my girls money they put in their own name, and now they're exposed to a tax. So now all of a sudden I've taken money that I earned and paid taxes on. I've paid taxes at death, and now I'm giving it to them just so that the money can then again be exposed to another tax. In other words, it's tax after tax after tax after tax. So what if we use a revocable living trust, whether you're single or married? Number one, you're married. Okay, we understand we're using both exemptions. Great. But the advantage, regardless of your marital status, is that when we start using a proper instrument, we want to look at how does money or how is money handed off to the next generation and start considering their financial ability. So we can, with a revocable living trust, create a mechanism, believe it or not, that after the estate taxes are paid at my level, so again, I die in the story, and let's say that, again, I'm single, I pay a tax, but then it moves to my girls. Instead of just writing them a check, number one, with a revocable living trust, I can do a much better job of helping them plan financially through that instrument. So my girls are just under the age of 30. And would I truly want to drop on 27, 28-year-olds $1.5 million and say, knock yourself out? Well, the person may want to create a better strategy of how they can use that over time to ensure that they're going to not make financial mistakes, make sure some of that money is going to be with them long term. So number one, a trust is an instrument where we can actually build in good, strong guidelines for that next generation's success. So that's a possibility. But when it's held in trust, if one of my girls passed away, because it was held under the same instrument that I created, when they pass away, whatever is left in the inheritance is not considered to be a part of their estate. So therefore, it's not double exposed to the estate taxing system. And so when we look at a family perspective or a family viewpoint, there's multiple reasons to consider using a better tool. Because again, if I used a will, if I used beneficiary designations on my bank accounts or on my IRAs, my 401ks, on my life insurance policies, whatever I may or may not own, then my girls simply just receive that in their hands. And now what if one of them is ever divorced in the future? Well, using a trust is a better, more secure way to ensure that that is that that money is going to be clearly indicated that it is their inheritance and separated from that divorce proceeding. What if they have a creditor? And what if they do really well financially? I don't want to re-expose what I've already done to estate taxes. So it's more a family orientated when we use a trust. We have a different perspective in using a trust. And yes, we should use a long-term family perspective when building a plan, not just what tax exposure does the client have. So yes, we definitely want to look at the family long-term and how does money move. I want to save as much taxes as possible so that my family, my girls, grandkids in the future can benefit from my hard work instead of Washington State or the federal government.
Well, again, talking about Washington State versus the federal tax issues, you say there's some impending changes coming on the federal side. Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
Yeah. So currently, the federal exemption is extremely high. It's just a little bit under $14 million per person. Okay, that's a significant amount for most individuals. I don't know what the percentages are. I think it's less than 2% of the American population is actually exposed to that tax. However, those rates or those exemption numbers were built into a budgetary clause. The thing about a budgetary clause is that it must end, anything done in there must end within a 10-year period. So at the end of 2025, so beginning January 1st, 2026, unless Congress does something, unless there is a new law that will supersede the current one, that the current exemption rates, very high on the federal level, are going to return to their previous number plus a rate of inflation. So what does that mean? It means that that it goes backwards, and we anticipate that the final number will be someplace between 6.5 million and 7 million per person. So that, in essence, cuts it in half.
Yeah.
And now, if you cut the federal estate tax in half, we're going to have a much higher number than just 1% of the population, 2% of the population exposed to this. I don't know what the numbers are. I haven't done the research on that. But it's going to be much more. It's going to be a lot more people.
Yeah.
And so, so a federal change, it's not that it's coming. It's already written into the law. So you have to have a lot more faith in Congress than what I do, in the U.S. Congress, to get their act together.
Or whatever administration is in there.
Well, yeah, but it's not even administration because the House and the Senate make their own budgets, and then they exchange them, and then they have to find unity so that one fluid budget hits the presidential desk. And so that's why the president's voice is kind of the cue on what they want, and then each of them respond. So they have to find agreement. Yeah, good luck. So I'm not sure that that is going to be found in the next 18 months with the way that our political system is working. It seems to be more polarizing. It seems to be more adverse than ever before, more hardline and edge responses instead of this cooperative way that our founding fathers really desired, which is have different opinions, but come on, people, work it out. Let's talk about it. It seems like all that is lost. So therefore, if nothing changes, the federal exemption power will come down. It is scheduled to decrease, and I believe it's going to be about half, someplace between 6.5 million, seven million per person. That's going to expose a lot more people to the federal estate tax. And oh, by the way, it goes back up to 45% with that change. So from 40 up to 45. That means that between that and the Washington state limit, you're well over 55% of tax exposure with anything that you have over those limits.
That's why estate planning is so important. You can make these optional.
It's
no
true.
Matter what Congress is doing. You can get these estate taxes to be optional with proper planning. People are intrigued by your approach to this subject. Paul, how do they find out more?
Yeah, you got to get together. We got to do good planning. And you can the first step is head over to legacyandfaith.com. There's past podcasts for more information, educational opportunities coming up, ways to communicate with us. And it's all found at legacyandfaith.com.
It's the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant.
Thank you for joining us for the Legacy and Faith Show. You can find more information about the show and Paul Grant at legacyandfaith.com. Join us next week at the same time as we learn to build God's kingdom and continue our journey on how to protect wealth and family values for generations. All discussions on the Legacy and Faith Show are intended to be about general legal issues. If a situation applies to you, then we encourage you to seek specific legal advice. Please do not rely upon any discussions from this program in place of having a personal relationship with your attorney. Any listener question that may have been answered also does not constitute legal advice and does not establish a client-attorney relationship.